Good morning. Today is Thursday, January the 7th. Joining us this morning, I'm trying to think. Was it Mary? Oh, really? Mary Poppins, I think.
Oh, great.
Fortuosity? Or was that Happiest Millionaire? I think that may have been Happiest Millionaire.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
That would be called, yeah, good fortune smiles.
Sure.
Our timing is good this morning, sir.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good morning, Brian. We've got Mr. Hansel with us. I guess probably a lot of people don't remember Happiest Millionaire.
Probably not.
It was one of the mid-60s Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
It had Fred McMurray.
Yes.
For me, it's probably still is my, that one or Jungle Book growing up.
Right.
Those were the two. That would be the real Jungle Book with Fred Harris as Blue. Not some CG rendition of what it was, yeah.
Right.
So did Winston warn you that there's a new sheriff in town, baby?
A new book, huh?
Yes.
Ever wonder why?
Yes. So far, we're kind of plugging along here, and people are getting relatively scarily close.
Really? Okay. Ever wonder why?
I don't know. All right. Ever wonder why? This kind of has, I know you don't have a mounted patrol, but.
Okay. Sure.
Ever wonder why riders always mount their horses from the left? Apparently you've not.
I have not. No.
The custom began centuries ago when men carried swords.
Okay.
Since most men are right-handed, the sword was usually carried on the left hip to make it more accessible to the right hand. With the long sword dangling from the rider's left side, it was clearly easier for him to mount his horse by putting his left foot into the stirrup and then throwing his right leg over the horse.
It makes total sense.
And you don't cut the horse.
That's right.
This, of course, required that the horse be mounted from the left. Even after riders no longer carried swords, mounting from the left continued to be the custom.
Absolutely. Makes total sense. Yes.
But you've got your pistol on the right.
I got my service weapon on the right.
I see. We're going to start doing that again, huh?
Yes.
So I would suspect that yesterday's developments at the Capitol had a special little level of anxiety for you than it did for the rest of us who had a heaping helping dose full. In general, thoughts?
Yeah, definitely shocking. You know, that's not how, you know, none of us wanted to see this thing play out, right? And when we see, you know, when we live in America, we have our Constitution, we have constitutional rights, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and to see a group of people getting together and protesting or having a Trump rally or whatever it is in front of the Capitol, perfectly within their right in front of the Constitution. But when people take it to the next level and then storm the Capitol building.
Yeah, when violence steps in.
And absolutely. And it's like, and then they want to cause an insurrection, so to speak, for those people that had gone through there. And again, the size of the crowd was a lot bigger than those people that decided to take those steps to go into the Capitol and to take it to the next level. And so I'm very curious to see who those people are, who they're affiliated with, as well as them being prosecuted to the full extent of the law. So there should be, you know, nothing held back on those people. What they did was purely, you know, despicable and just, I just don't know. I mean, there's no cause, no reason for it. So
it was shared that information was available in advance, not to the total extent, obviously.
Yeah.
But a permit was taken out.
Sure.
Okay. The expectations were there. There was knowledge there. A little bit of a surprise. So with the intelligence that goes in to advance for some of that process, when you have, and we certainly haven't had anything to that extent here, how do you ferret through that? How do you anticipate and then plan and apply the resources to a large gathering that might go emotional?
Right. So if it's predictable, it's preventable. Okay, it's a classic statement that we say in law enforcement. So what we have here is we have an emotionally charged crowd there. And so you have to predict what could happen and prepare for all scenarios. And that's part of an instant action plan that should be in place for the people that are responsible for keeping the peace there.
But storming the courthouse or storming City Hall or whatever it is that ever considered?
Yes.
That is part of the contingency plans you guys go through whenever there's a gathering.
Yes. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to tip our hat here as far as what we've done to prepare in certain rallies.
But you take the full spectrum.
Absolutely we do. So we prepare for worst case scenarios. And for, you know, the people that, you know, we had some protests over the Black Lives Matter and those things over the summer. And the police department, the sheriff's office, California Highway Patrol, we prepared. We prepared for the worst case scenarios. But what you saw on the outside wasn't the worst case scenario, right? We prepared and we let the protests dictate the response. And so that is what would be appropriate in D.C. And I would assume that they have this down. That it was a playbook, that when there's a rally, you always meet with the organizers, that you talk about it, talk about rules of engagement and those kind of things. A lot of times, even the people that are organizing a rally will tell you, we're going to be peaceful, or we want to push this to a point of arrest, you know, those kind of things. Those are the kind of relationships that are built over time.
Oh, they'll tell you in advance?
They'll tell us in advance. Sometimes, you know, when we have protests at you know, certain logging events or chain themselves to gates or those kind of things, say, hey, we're going to be here to be arrested. We want to make a statement. And so it's okay, as long as we understand that, you know, we can go there and we can facilitate that. But it's our job to prepare for those worst case scenarios and then hope for the best. And so what we've seen, too, is we've spent a lot of time and money on overtime and those kind of things, preparing for different protests, you know, that didn't turn into anything other than a peaceful protest. And, you know, everyone went away and everyone was peaceful. But if it did take a turn, we were prepared for that.
Sure, you're loaded for bear and then
yes.
You don't need it. That's okay.
Yes.
It's somehow refreshing that there's that kind of communication prior to.
Right.
Or at the event, and they say, hey, look, we're not going to do anything, but we do want to be taken away.
Right. And so that's the ideal moment. But those relationships are built, right? And so that's where trust comes in on both sides.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Considering some of the different experiences that we've had here, and certainly the microcosm, it pales in comparison, but on a percentage basis, okay, we've had somewhat semi-anarchist experiences.
Sure.
Redwood Summer was one.
Right.
You know, some of the tree-sitting stuff. Okay. And we've had some of that kind of thing. I wouldn't think that small rural areas are ever going to be the target of this kind of a thing. You know, I know that the Capitol buildings in a number of the states also had some action yesterday as well. I don't think Sacramento did. How do you know, is this something we have to do? Is this something we should do? Is this something that really isn't going to play on Main Street, Humboldt County?
You know, I think you have to just, everything's scalable, right? And so I think you have to look at every event and know how to prepare for it. So like I said before, sometimes there's planned protests and we're meeting with the protesters, we're meeting with the organizers to talk about, you know, what is the intent of the protest. And so, just so we can get a flavor of how we will respond to that. But again, it's our job to kind of make sure that everyone's constitutional rights are adhered to. And so they have the right to free speech, assemble, to protest, but also they don't have the right to infringe on the constitutional rights of others. And to make sure once that line is crossed, then, you know, we have to intervene at that point in time. And to make sure that we do have plenty of of you know personnel to handle that situation. So oftentimes we do call in personnel. People are on standby. And the biggest thing too is we're coordinating with the other agencies. When things happen at the courthouse, Eureka Police Department is in charge of the external outside of the courthouse and the security of that. And so we're coordinating with Eureka Police Department, you know, virtually every time there's a planned protest there. And then coordinating with California Highway Patrol, as well as Arcata and Fortuna to bring in mutual aid if necessary. And so that those open lines of communication within our small rural area is very, very good. So, and we saw that over the elections. We saw that over, you know, protests, both, you know, Redwood Summer and other planned protests out in different parts of the county. So those mutual aid requests are adhered to. And I think as long as we prepare for it and have those operational plans in place, we prepare for those kind of worst case scenarios.
I think going back, the only thing I can kind of sort of equate something similar to is when they went into Frank Riggs' office when he was congressman.
True.
And did the V's, what were those things called?
Yeah, they locked down in the sleeves, the metal sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they have a metal and they lock into there. And so
there was more of an occupation thing. That wasn't a destructive thing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Dropping a redwood burl in and that kind of stuff and locking down in his office. Yep. That kind of stuff does happen. And sometimes, again, we're not prepared for those things. But, you know, same thing happens, you know, with HRC property, Humboldt Redwood Company, this last year protesting in harvest plan for Mattole Valley. And so they locked themselves down in the gate. They locked themselves to a tree. And so we're responsive to that, and we'll assist.
One of the aspects that seems always most volatile, I guess, at least outside looking in, is when it goes from rational to emotional. You know, I know that there were some stories this summer that at a couple of the events, there were a couple of pudding stirrers that were trying to get it, light the fuse, so to speak. And nobody else really had interest in that. Do you have that as the biggest fear? Is it something that is kind of, you know, okay, it's a parade, it's a march, and then all of a sudden something happens and then it takes off?
Yes, that is our biggest concern, is because the level of emotion oftentimes that are in a rally, in a protest, you know, it can go the other way. It can become a riot. It can become emotionally driven. And then, you know, that quote riot mentality, mob mentality, so to speak, where it takes one thing, one broken window, one person chanting, and then people are following them.
Yeah, it kind of feeds on itself.
And then once there's not a response for that first incident, then people feel empowered, entitled to go and carry on the same activities. So that's why it's appropriate to have a level of response to take care of those issues from the very beginning. If you let it go, then it creates a bigger fire.
How good is the intelligence that you have? I mean, you've got the organizer.
Yeah.
Great, okay, and that may be the logical, rational part of the program. But you've got somebody over there in the weeds.
Yes.
That's stirring it up, that's going to either be affiliated with it or decide just to show up and see this as an opportunity.
Right.
To leverage in. Do you have those levels of knowledge?
Yes.
Or do you just kind of have to prepare, again, worst case scenario, and if that doesn't happen, that's okay.
Yeah, we had some of that this summer. We had some of those, and you know, and despite the fact that we had maybe some good relationships with the people that, you know, or open lines of communication, say, with the people that were planning some of these protests, there were instigators. There were people there that were saying, this is not what we should be about. We shouldn't be marching with law enforcement. We're against them. And, you know, we need to defund the police and that kind of stuff and push that narrative. And luckily, the crowd didn't follow those people. And so they became frustrated and left. And so.
But it probably was a good reminder.
Absolutely.
How close something like that could happen.
Yes. And how things could be triggered really, really quickly.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now, Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, and Baywood Golf and Country Club. Billy, looking at what we saw yesterday, I'm sure that your network probably is already ripping around, and there's been, almost 24 hours now since it started, so that you've got a lot of comments and things of that nature from other agencies throughout the country. Is there a consensus? Is there a thought? Is there anything that's starting to happen other than stunned?
I think, again, when you look at that whole event, as far as law enforcement goes, we put ourselves in those shoes and we say, how can we prevent that happening in our house? And so we'll start critiquing that situation and learn from those mistakes.
Will you be able to get the facts?
We, being at a federal agency, probably not. We will get some informational briefings about that. But I don't know if there's going to be an after action that's going to be published because of it, because it's a national security type issue as far as, the Capitol building, those kinds of things.
Well, sure. There was a certain number of weaknesses that were exposed with that whole thing.
Absolutely, there were. So I think that will probably remain confidential due to national security. But, I mean, we can take away many things from that and learn from them. And so, again, I'm just disappointed, obviously angry that it happened along with a lot of people. And, again, it didn't have to be that way on a number of different fronts. And I think everyone's going to learn, and then we are going to continue to move on and press forward and continue to move this country forward.
The lack of response out of the president or the president's office, is that something that can be learned also? Because I wouldn't think if you guys are loaded for the physicalness of it all, to have the folks behind you that are either superiors or peers in different areas that if nothing else, there should be some discussion about, hey, if we need you to come in and help drain the swamp, the emotional swamp, how do we make contact with you because you are a leader in the blank community, or you are the elected of the mayor in that kind of a scenario,
right?
If it's in a city rather than the county, those types of things that could have diffused or at least brought down the emotional pitch a little bit.
Absolutely.
Is that part of the pre-planning?
Well, being a political figure myself, being a sheriff, and seeing locally kind of and nationally kind of how people have stepped away from some tough topics, but also people seeing what people have done to instigate as well. This could have been, you have to, as a leader, you have to be, you are responsible, okay, to step forward in these kind of events, to speak the truth to people, but also to quell and to understand, too, that you could instigate, by every word, you could instigate a situation and cause people to act on your behalf.
Like an escalate or de-escalate by your actions or by your lack of actions.
Absolutely, yes.
Kind of like a four-quadrant grid.
Yes, and so, you use a good word, de-escalation, right? And that's exactly what our leaders should do and what President Trump should do, And despite the fact that, the election results, were not in his favor and that it didn't go his way yesterday as far as the Electoral College, it's his time to say, at this point in time, he's done everything possible. He appreciates the support. But right now, we need to do a smooth transition to the latest party. There wasn't clear and convincing evidence provided to a court system that overturned any of the election results. And that's the process that we use in our country. And so you have to respect that. like it or not. You have to respect it. And so we, as leaders, you have to understand your level of responsibility to say there is a bigger picture here in the United States. So we are, you know, out of many, one, right? And so the idea of we can have some unity in our diversity in this, but we have to have a mutual respect for one another the entire time. So I hope that we can take away as leaders that we have a level of responsibility to step up in these critical times to say the right thing, to make sure that people understand where we are.
I hadn't thought about that, but you kind of straddle the fence. I mean, yeah, you're politically elected.
Yes.
But if most people said sheriff, cop, or politician.
Right. Cop.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's probably, you don't want to be seen as a political.
No. But that is a political office. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's an elected office. I don't know.
Yes. It is an elected office.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Hansel. Billy, moving away from what happened yesterday a little bit to what's been happening here locally with the virus and some of the things that are going on. Interesting that we were the only county that was ratcheted back a little bit.
Yes.
Hooray for us. Are we going to be able to stick there, or do you think we're going to kick back up?
I think we will see ourselves in the purple tier probably next week. We're going to wait and see what the numbers are, but I think that we're looking, as Dr. Hoffman has said, that we have purple tier numbers right now. And so unless we have, I guess, some good days the next couple of days, we're looking at going into purple probably next Tuesday. I think we have 24 hours to come in compliance, so by next Wednesday, we'll have to shut our restaurants down to outdoor dining only, and that kind of thing. So the biggest thing, too, is that there are other counties that are red counties, but they're in medical regions that have their ICU capacity that's below 15%. So they're at a stay-at-home order. So, but we are still the only region in the state. It's basically us all the way over through Reading North that is not at a stay-at-home order because our ICU bed capacity exceeds 15%. We have been, you know, hovering around 40-45% availability, which is very, very good. I applaud St. Joe's because they expanded their ICU and they're making things a priority to put only, you know, the people that are necessary in ICU and staffing the beds so we can count those. And so I applaud St. Joe's because they could have gone the other way. They could have still gone procedures. They still could have gone a whole bunch of different ways, but they have basically put us in a position where we can keep our businesses open. Because
the percentages with the tests, you know, we're hearing now 58,000 tests, a little bit short of 2,000 positives. 2,000 positives, how many hospitalizations? Because there's a difference between testing positive, the whole right. asymptomatic thing, and somebody who's really in tough sledding.
Right.
Are we doing okay?
Yeah. So that's a really good question because, you know, we saw from the very beginning we were concerned about prevalence in the community. What are our numbers, right? How many people have COVID? And then that relates, but we see how there really is a small percentage of deaths resulting with how many people actually test positive. And there is those demographics that obviously it adversely affects. But we're seeing that hospitalizations are really staying stable through this whole thing. We had 1,000 cases roughly in December, and we had a lot, right? Everyone was seeing that and tracking that. And our hospitalizations were fairly stable, you know, 4-7 hospitalizations at any given time.
The raw number, not the percentage,
right,
a raw number.
The raw number. So, and that's just someone, it could be someone is checking in the hospital, you know, for 12 hours and then getting pushed back out. So there are people, you know, getting this that are dying. There's people that are in ICU right now that have COVID. And so it is definitely a serious illness. But we're seeing, as far as the numbers go, things are fairly stable up here. I believe that that we are at the top of the curve here. Dr. Hoffman said that the other day, and that we hope to start seeing this decline now. And over the course of the next month, I hope that we'll be back in red and some of the lower tiers.
Positive test numbers, is that what the predicate is, or
yes,
is it the hospitalization
it
numbers?
Well, it's positive test numbers. That's the thing, and prevalence in there. But the one thing that's kind of offset us and put us in red is that we've had so many people tested here in Humboldt County. That is creating an avenue for us to actually be in the red tier, because our numbers of positivity rating is higher than the state will allow. But because we have so many people tested, you know, it drops our number down. And so so I applaud our community for that. And also, you know, again, our community is one of the, maybe probably the smallest community that has our local public health lab. And so we are testing a lot of people through our public health lab and that kind of thing.
What about the vaccines? And I know that's not your
no.
your area. Do the hospitals or the medical facilities, are they the ones that have got the vaccines and then they're determining how to apply them?
Unfortunately, it is determined by the state as far as who gets the vaccine first. But it's open to a lot of interpretation from county's perspective. So public health officials in the county are the ones that are the conduit. They're the ones that receive the vaccine, and then they have a plan to a distribution plan. Our current distribution plan is to do through the hospitals and the and all of the providers, as well as some pharmacies. So right now, focusing on healthcare and some first responders. Once that's done, 75 and older, congregate living facilities, skilled nursing facilities. And so there's different phases. I encourage people to go to humboldtgov.org. We have the vaccine rollout guidelines there as far as who's in what phase and where we are.
Regular folks, 2-3 months?
I would say open to the public in 6 months.
Oh, joy.
Yes.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Brian.
We'll see everybody tomorrow.